Call our meeting to order. Please stand to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Terry Rapp with the Highway Department, come on up.
Good evening.
Hello.
I haven't got much here. The bottom line is, Gary and I was going to go to that commissioner's conference next Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
We're going to go Wednesday, I guess. I don't know. We need your approval.
Move to approve the conference request for Gary Kruger and Mr. Ruff. This trip, you going?
Yeah.
Were you guys able to get logged into the LTAP and get registered? Is that the thing? That's my motion. I'll approve it.
I'll second.
I have a motion and second to allow the conference request to go forward. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Then on work projects, I guess, the bottom line is we're cutting some trees. We put in the multiplate. We got the saw all ready to go. The trucks are ready to go, hopefully. It was this weekend, you know, there was a possibility we could have got a little ice, but nothing happened. So, really, that's about all. So I saw me down to the stockpile. That's what we're doing now. You guys got any questions? Or
no, I want to thank you for the tree trim job down there.
Well, I kind of wondered. Supposedly, I heard there was an accident on 700 North Friday night, but I believe it was across the highway. We did have a few trees down Friday night in the windstorm.
Yes.
And so anyway, we appreciate that, Terry. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else?
I don't. Good. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Nikki's here with the EMS report.
Do you guys have any
questions?
I do not. Nope. Okay. Status of the ambulance that was involved in an accident. Finally made contact with the adjuster. He came out. I have yet to see a report on the damage. Dobson did contact me today. They're going to have them have it to. That's who we're going to have do the body work on.
Okay. And the other ambulances are up and running okay to
so far.
Fill in the void there?
So far.
Okay. They give a estimate of what it might be a month, 2 months?
Dobson said that they wanted to get to looking at it so they could order parts. So I know they're kind of backlogged right now with deers, but
like train damage or
according to the adjuster, he did not see any frame damage. It's pretty much, I don't want to say cosmetic, but repairable.
Okay.
He did not believe it was total.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Ethan Orger, CDC report, and some other business at hand.
Sure, you can make an arm of that. Good evening, everybody. And real quickly, and then we'll get to the, I just got a couple of quick updates. General stuff. after the holiday when we get back into December, Christian and I will start. One of the top priorities is prepping for her going full-time, starting to map out what things I'm going to pass off to her and which things, responsibilities I'll keep. We'll be taking the finished route maps for HCI and starting to look at what we want as far as actual brochure design and signage for the HCI grant. Kristen will be reaching out to potential members of our planned Tourism Advisory Council before we really get into tourism season in the spring. And I will be clearing some space on the calendar to dive back into the county website. RB did a document dump, whole lot of county ordinances that need to get up there, and I've got to figure out, you know, which need to go up and which have been repealed and or been replaced 37 times, you know, like salary ordinances from every year from however long, as well as kind of sorting them and figuring out whether we're just going to have one ordinance page for, you know, right now, for instance, the zoning ordinance and the building ordinance and that sort of stuff are on the building and zoning page, and health-related ordinances are on the health page, so see if we're going to sort it that way or just one page for ordinances or both so they can go either route and find them. And then I'll probably be getting with Doug and Chance and getting back on track with the rest of the fee schedules. You know, we've got the public hearing for the Planning Commission next week, and that's only going to cover actual zoning-related fees and residential building for now until we have time to finish updating the rest of them.
What time is that meeting?
That's 7 o'clock right in here, a week from tonight.
That's for?
That'll be the
Planning Commission.
Yeah, the Planning Commission will do a hearing on changes to the ordinance,
okay,
some zoning map changes, and this first part of the fee schedule.
Okay.
And then they'll also be doing their internal rules of procedure. They're like the bylaws, because those hadn't really been touched in quite some time and didn't necessarily correspond to the Indiana Code totally or towards our ordinance. So those are all ready to go, and we just have a few minor tweaks to make. On Friday, before I left for the weekend, I submitted a proposal in response to a request for proposals from the state for a project, a light industrial project, submitted the industrial park here. We're probably in Winnemac too far from a four-lane highway based on some of the language in the proposal, but they were looking for Northwest Indiana, and the property is big enough, so threw it out there just in case. Don't know what it is other than that it is light industrial. Depending on the company, the state sometimes doesn't give a whole lot of details other than that it's some sort of production. So we'll see if anything comes of that. Just very quickly on the industrial park project in the county farm, Milligan is still working on that survey, and as I've noted in the past, whether we go forward with selling any of the land or all of the land or none of the land, this is probably just going to be in our best interest anyway, because the deed on record still has all of the old farm property that's been subdivided into residential lots in part of town and does not separate the airstrip from what we consider industrial park to sort of the gray area between county park and industrial park, the transfer station. So either way, those will end up being individual parcels. And some of them have been surveyed, have never been recorded. When the county entered a 99-year lease with Winnemac Aero Modelers, that 20-acre section was surveyed. It was just never split or recorded. So they've got that already. They've got the work they already did on the county home. And so they'll just be carving new parcels, carving those out as already surveyed, and then creating separate parcels for the industrial park area, the farmland south of the county road, and the recycling and transfer station. You two were both there. You were not in the last week of the council meeting. Presented the idea of using CEDIT and then reimbursing if the farm sells. Council didn't take any action. Mike TD was running the meeting and wanted to have Roger and Jay present for discussion. And then as I did report, they did not take any action with the sale of the county home either, because we did not have the ordinance yet. Kevin, is that ready to go, or where does that stand?
Does the council vote to sell it?
They did not have the ordinance to...
Well,
the month before they said they would be good, but.
Well, I heard them talk about it. I heard a lot of agreement. I didn't hear a vote there. I sent an email out that said that. Was there a vote?
No, they didn't take any action at this point.
Well, if they decide they want to sell it, then,
so, okay.
then we just have to set forward the terms of an ordinance.
Okay. So, get them to say yes to selling it, and then, I misunderstood. So, you want them actually to say yes, we're going to sell it before?
And then we'll set forth the terms in an ordinance. That's all this board did, is say yes, we want to sell it.
Okay. Okay.
We need their agreement. And then we can have an executive session to hash out the details.
I did get this from Colin. Thank you. I've sent it to Jim Hadley to see if he has anything to say or if he's ready to sign it. As soon as I hear from him, I will meet with him to get him to sign it, and I'll sign it and then get it back to you guys to move forward. Okay, that is all I have right there. Any questions on any of that? On any of that, just the best one.
I do not.
You did.
Okay, then got Brad Johnson and Andrew Roberts from Braun Ability here tonight.
And gentlemen, want to come on up.
And Instructor, you would do the pleasure, Mr. Young. I would ask that you open the public hearing on the petition by Braun Land Development Corporation, actual petitioner, one of the property owners of the Braun campus, to vacate those parts of County Road 60 West, also known as Fitz Industrial Parkway, between Highway 14 and County Road 25 South.
Watch the stop. Cable slipped in dryer.
Sorry,
I want you to
help
me. Make room for everybody here. Sure. I'll call our public hearing
to order. How do you want to proceed? Would you like for us to explain the proposed request first? I have a copy of the ordinance. I don't know if you want me to read the document in its entirety or not, but I certainly can do that. Or do you just want us to go through the nuts and bolts first, so it's up to you?
That's good nuts and bolts.
Okay, so what the petitioners are requesting is that the roadway, County Road 60 West, also known as Fitz Industrial Park, be vacated between County Road, the State Highway, and County Road 25 South. If I can kind of do a graphic here, help explain. So let's say there are three layers here. You've got the first layer, this table is the ground. This is the property. BLD 2, I believe, owns it on the east side, and I'm not sure who owns it on the west side, but one of the Braun family companies that own the ground from which Braun Corporation leases own all the ground here. On top of that, there's an invisible layer, we'll say, a 100-foot wide easement. There are actually two of them running from the 14 to 25 South. And then there is the road paved on top of the easement. There are two easements, I said. Nothing would change hands in the ultimate ownership. Underneath that easement, it's still bronze with an easement to the county. The easement would remain intact per this ordinance, so that, as the ordinance stipulates, one, the town of Winnemac, NIPSCO, any telecom providers, any future utility providers would still have access for maintenance, installation, repair, that sort of thing. And so that someday, if, God forbid, Braun Ability would leave town, or they would rearrange how they're using their campus and not need to be operating on both sides or not having cross traffic anymore, the county could retain would retain the right to reopen that road if it so wished. Then on top of that easement, the road itself is what we would be closing, and would make essentially a semi-private roadway. As part of that, Braun Ability has agreed to enter into a roadway access agreement with the county that stipulates that county trucks going to and from recycling and transfer would still be able to have access. Trucks going to SNS Precast would still, to and from SNS Precast would still have access. Trucks going to RNS Welding would still have access. And it further stipulates that in the future, if I open a widget factory on some of the undeveloped ground out there, I would enter into my own. I could enter into my own agreement for the same use. I believe it is worded that it would be guaranteed access between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. and with reasonable notice, 24-hour access to any of the users. I don't think, for the most part, any of the other tenants out there are getting shipments at 4 in the morning, but if for some reason that were to happen, as long as Bong would be provided sufficient access, that would be granted. I do have copies of the ordinance, if you guys want to take a look, as well as the roadway access agreement. For anyone who would like to look, I think I have a copy for everyone. I may have given you two copies. Sorry, I'm not sure.
I've got another one. Okay.
So those are the specifics of the ordinance as presented and the roadway access agreement. There are copies of the easements from 1984 and 1990 included as exhibits to the ordinance, as well as the roadway access agreement. It has not been signed and notarized by all parties, so this won't get recorded if you approve it until after that has occurred, but I have copies of those as well in there for you to take a look at. So that's my part. I've got the green certified mail card showing that mail was delivered to all of the adjacent landowners. We also did send one to SNS Precast. And that's all I've got. I will hand it over to these gentlemen to talk about the specifics of why they want to do this, what their end goal is.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. Nathan, thank you, Commissioner. I'm Brad Johnston. I know some of you with me is Andrew Rogers, also from Long. Just like to address a few things related to this resolution that Long would like to say on behalf of the company. I think it's important to understand why this has even come up. And this landed on my desk about 2 months ago. You might remember it was also an agenda item for a meeting about that long ago. I had heard that we were going to propose a resolution, and there were some parties that weren't supportive of that. I made the decision to, with Nathan's help, to withdraw from the agenda, and then went about talking to some of the people who would be affected by this. SNS Precast, Ms. Rosenbaum, and the RNS SMR Welding studied some data, showed how it seemed to benefit everybody in not having public traffic on that on this road we're talking about, met with the business owners and you commissioners individually. It was important for me as part of the community to make sure that we were reaching out and disclosing to everybody what our intentions were and were not. I learned that there may be some fear that Braun was going to deny access to businesses. That's not the case. I assured them that they would have the same access, they being the businesses and employees of those businesses, that they would have the same access that the Braun has. We would make sure of that. We went down this path of attempting to work with the county to close the road because it's important to us. And I'm not sure that an adequate explanation of why it's important to us has been given, so let me do that now. Several months ago, almost a year ago now, we started working with the Indiana Economic Development Commission to get grants from the state to help us financially. And one of the grants that was offered to us was up to a $200,000 IEDC grant to match dollar for dollar for employee training. We obviously wanted to take part and receive that grant. However, it's a policy of the IEDC to require the county have some kind of participation to accompany the state, some kind of interest back to Braun as well. But we decided that we weren't going to ask the county for a tax break or a grant. Didn't feel that was fair to the residents. And we started thinking about what the needs were around the company. And one of the needs were security. We've got close to 900 employees over there. This drive that we're talking about, Fitz Parkway, has, and we've counted this with data, 824 crossings each day by employees, forklifts, and tugs carrying carts back and forth to the two plants. They don't know our plants are separated. We call them plant three on one side, plant four on the other, and parts are, and people go back and forth each day. There are also 589 vehicles that are on that road every day. Only 16% of them are semis, hauling our products and S&S concrete, so forth. Most of the, obviously, vast majority of the traffic is just public vehicles. We believe it's not whether an accident's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. You can't have that amount of traffic going back and forth with all those vehicles. Luckily, to this point, there's been no accident. Nobody's gotten hurt, but we're very fearful of that. Secondly, it would allow us an opportunity to secure our campus perimeter. We plan to do that with fencing and encircle the campus that is obviously many acres to prevent any non-employee from not going through the proper channels for entry into the building. Some may know that this was a year and a half ago now, we had somebody actually drive into the back of our Plant 4 facility there on the west side of Fitz Parkway, pull in one of the garage bays, get out of the car, clearly intoxicated, and went and helped finding O'Hare Airport. This scared a lot of the employees and a lot of the management, and so that's the type of security we're talking about. So those are the reasons. That's why we're here tonight. Again, I've said that I've met with, both Andrew and I have met with the various business owners. We've also presented some data to them that shows these crossings I'm telling you about, as well as vehicular traffic, both on Fitz Parkway and on, I think it's 25, they're running in front of S&S Precast's facility. I've also met with Megan Allen of S&S and showed her the data, showed her how few times across the street they really go, told her that, assured her that, you know, we would work with her and Richard to make sure that there's little, if any, impact on their business, again, telling them they'd have access, assuring them that they've had access, they'd have access the same way we do with Braun. I hope they're supportive. The other businesses are, and just for a few facts from this data study I was telling you about that we conducted, it's important to note that Braun employees start at 6 a.m. and their workday ends at 2 o'clock. So the traffic into and out of our facility are obviously just before those hours. S&S starts at 7 and leaves at 3. So there wouldn't be any, you know, impact. Most of the employees arrive initially at work, do arrive before S&S even starts its day. In the 2 days that we studied traffic back and forth from our two SNS precasts, there were three semis arriving and departing there. Little traffic. And those three semis would use the same route, I assume, that they use today, because they would have access. So I don't see any effect really on their business. I know that when our employees depart, if we close that road, there would be some traffic going in front of SNS for a short period of time, 20-25 minutes. But we found only a handful of crossings back and forth by SNS employees during that time period. We don't think it would have much impact at all with our employees leaving at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I don't know if I've covered everything, but I've appreciate the opportunity to speak here this evening and in support of this. We, on behalf of the company, Andrew and I both want to thank you for your time and Nathan for his help. And we hope the county will consider this proposal and we sure help our business.
Jerry, I want to add one thing before you open up to public comment, just to make up. The reason I am up here with them is because of the economic development, the IEDC component. When Brad says that they are getting a grant, they are getting a grant as an incentive for additional investment in the company. I don't know the details of the investment. I don't know how much money would throw into new employment. That's between the company and the state. But I met. This was something that had been discussed in the past, closing it separate of these current investment plans. And knowing, and this when we were really getting into this, this was earlier this year at the height of the conversations about courthouse plans and funding, and discussions about how tight county budgets are, and that is what led to the decision to look at this avenue as a state as local incentive, local skin in the game for the state incentive, rather than asking for a tax abatement. When Brad mentions not asking for a tax break, he's talking about not asking the county council for an abatement on any of the new investment that the company ends up making. So that is what why I am at the table with them tonight.
Okay. Brad, you mentioned SNS has three semis a day. Are you semis, or is it the trucks hauling the cement in? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, the cement trucks.
Okay, so semis, that's another question that someone else can answer that. How much semi-traffic comes in daily on that?
I appreciate the clarification. I don't think we saw any semis coming through. It was just the concrete trucks.
On the future, Brad, you talk about maybe permanent security beds.
Yeah.
Does Matt Rapps come in on weekends to load his semis? Will he have a pass or something?
Oh, absolutely. 24/7, every day of the week, that place will be manned. We're thinking, just to be clear, we haven't made any final decisions with regard to how this security would be set up, but we think the most rational way to do it is to simply have a guard there during those hours and available within 10 or 15 minutes if someone were to need access, with the instruction from us, me, to whomever that person is, that, you know, just be reasonable about this. If someone comes and they're here and they really have business, then, you know, let them through. This isn't, we're not trying to make this more difficult than it is, and we are certainly going to be reasonable with regard to this. The goal here, obviously, is to close it to the 400 and some during the day, you know, personal vehicles that go through there to protect our workers. So, yeah, I just don't think there's going to be any problem with access, regardless of who's there and what time it is.
Could the roadway be limited only to semi-traffic? Is there any laws where it's just that style of equipment coming through versus cars, you know, truck lane and car lane? Is there a way that that could be done where this is truck traffic only down this roadway.
What are you talking about? Commercial trucks?
Correct.
Yeah, well, there will be.
Larry, I think the answer to your question is that whether or not there is. Unless this actually, the vacation actually occurs so that they have the right to have a manned gate, it's going to be really difficult to enforce that and kind of going to negate the whole purpose of doing that, I think. I understand what you're saying. Say, we're not closing the road, but we are barring passenger vehicle traffic. I don't know if there's a statute that says you can, but even if you can, I don't know how you enforce that other than actually physically closing the road at some point south of 25 South so that there's no way to get through, which then affects the recycling and transfer station and the future development. I don't know how you would go about enforcing unless you have a sheriff's deputy there 24/7 to...
I don't have any more questions.
I guess open it to public comment.
Yes.
I do have one email from Rhonda Lamer. She and her husband live on 75 West and express their opposition. I believe they are here, though. So unless she wants me to, I won't read the whole email. And
Rhonda, you want to speak or you want to read the email?
Basically, it's just, I use that road all the time, and I have no problem. The majority of the time when I'm on that road, nobody is there. I go in the morning, I slow down, I see a few vehicles or people, and then when I come home, nobody's out there. And especially on the weekends, nobody's there. I just use it all the time, and I hate to see it closed.
Thank you. Let's go. I'll start with Bob and state your name and speak your mind.
Bob Powers. Way back when, 15 years ago, when Brown wanted to come to Third Street down, they wanted to close that road. They didn't close it, they voted it down. So they went ahead and bought it, now they have to work around it. If there's a law against speed bumps yet or something like that to slow them down. But he said they run 824 feet times across there. That figures out roughly 70 a minute, which is like 1 minute and 15 seconds, somebody's crossing that road. That's kind of hard to believe, because I've traveled that road often, and I hate to see it closed. But I see Ron's brought high-powered people here, but I hope you people have got enough ideas. We haven't had a problem. But I live right there at 114, and there's a lot of near misses, and I've seen a lot of traffic. Well, there's a fatality here about 10 years ago. There. If you're going to do something to straighten it up, you're going to have to do something about getting back on the highway. But I'm more concerned that who's going to police it? If you give it to there, is the county going to come in and plow the snow and upkeep it?
Nope.
It's kind of like, you better take a look at a lot of this stuff before you throw it. Just because somebody wants it. No sense, letting it happen.
Bob, you made mention, made a reference there, getting back on the highway. Can you elaborate a little bit more what you want to say there?
Well, it's kind of like, maybe SMS and some of these guys comes in. The cars come in, the hauling cars into Bronze, they come in the back way. They swing out in the other left lane,
okay,
and then turn there on 100. Like when they come out, they still got some bushes there, the neighbors. And like 10 years ago, we used to have an evergreen, that bothered us. But that was his aunt, and the county didn't take it down, but the state come in and done it, There's a lot of things I think that... I wouldn't make a decision because two of you people are going to be gone. Let the next two commissioners, they're the ones that are going to have to deal with it. You make the decision. They got to live with your decision, and that's not right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Jim Gould, I own a property straight south of the road you're talking about, and I have seen the traffic across there. I mean, we pulled up through there. I raised some livestock there, and we go through. Have you talked to SMS Precast any at all, Nathan?
Yes.
What is there? I mean,
it's good. Megan is here, and I will refer to her business.
But, I mean, we as a county have to take care of our businesses, I feel. One way or another, you gotta kind of cater to the business and take care of them to keep them here. And I guess it inconvenienced me just a little, but overall, hey, you make it work. There's other ways around.
Thank you. Welch. Dan
Mallon. I got a question about the additional traffic from the employees. Will they be allowed to come through there, or will they be diverted to our town streets more? That's my only concern, is where they're on our town streets more.
If you're asking me, sir, yeah, I mean, it's they would not be, we hadn't considered opening the road for employees. I guess you're talking about it at the
start and quit time.
We haven't anticipated the opening of that for the employees to come and go. So I guess the answer to the question would be no. Is that a deal killer?
This question as to whether our town streets are going to get more use and wear and tear on them.
And again, I've been out working on that property, and when they close, they're on the streets anyway. I mean, they're coming down the street to 60 South. They're going to use the streets. I mean, they have to. I don't think it's any more or less any one way or the other.
So I'm going to go out 14 is what I'm getting at, instead of coming the other way. But now everybody will be forced to either come that way or go to 100.
Correct.
Yeah. You're looking at 225 cars on a daily basis for roughly 20 to 25 minutes as far as our peak traffic hours. So that's the volume that we have to deal with that will redirect, whether it be a town road or another route to 14.
Okay, I'm just curious as to if there was any way that the employees was going to use it or if they were going to use our streets as well. Thank you.
I guess, Terry, who's going to maintain it, I guess? Or the county will be responsible for it?
No.
Although we will be able to use it?
That's right. Yeah. We'll all maintain that property.
Quarter of a mile.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's an easement that allows state and county to use it whenever they need it.
So our utility people will be able to get down there anytime then?
That's correct.
Absolutely. Who else? Someone?
Megan, did you want to speak?
Fred, do you want me to
speak? Well, Megan, why don't you come up and I represent SNS. My name is Fred Schaefer. I'm an attorney from Carmel, Indiana. But thank you. I appreciate you letting us join you this evening. Having Megan in the chat with you, gentlemen, I think might be my thought. I have a couple of issues once Megan finishes hers, but my mic. That's fine. Why don't you chat with the commissioners about what you prepared?
Sure. Yeah. I've prepared a statement about our daily operations. Do you think I can see how this will directly affect us before this closes? Want to take time to make sure that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask Mr. Johnson a question.
Sure.
You said, Mr. Johnson, you guys did a study for 2 days, is that correct?
Yeah, that's true.
But that's it.
That's true. The pattern is very similar on each of those days.
Well, but my point being is it would be difficult, I would say at best, to ascertain what the use is actually required. by S&S's trucking needs if you only do it for 2 days out of 365 days a year. That'd be a safe assessment.
People can answer that question for themselves. I think it's a pretty fair assessment.
You were offering that it was a fair representation.
Those 2 days, I'm not sure what. Yeah.
Those 2 days, not a regular basis.
People can make up their own mind in terms of how reasonable that was. Counselor?
Okay, this probably should be read into the record if it's going to be considered as part of the discussion.
I'll read it in direct if you'd like. If you'd like, Larry, go ahead.
Maybe
you
can come my
help. No, go
ahead. S&S Precast Incorporated is a manufacturer of mechanically stabilized earth panels. MSE panels are precast concrete structures used in civil applications such as retaining walls, bridge abutments, and approach ramps. The precast industry is a highly competitive, ever-changing, and unpredictable. Current market is demanding higher quality product at lower prices, which has been achievable through efficient production practices and competitive freight rates. S&S Precast Incorporated is a truck-dependent business. Currently, we have an average of 4 to 5 outbound loads each day. The number of loads per day varies based upon the provisions of the contract with our customer. Year to date, we've had 12 active contracts, therefore, it is not possible to predict the maximum number of daily outbound shipments. The uncertainties are made manageable through the implementation of the drop and hook strategy. A driver coming to pick up a load trailer will ride with an empty trailer. They will pick up the loaded trailer and leave the empty one. This cycle process ensures that there are always readily available trailers to load, making the entire shipping process more convenient, cost-effective, and streamlined. With that being said, our truck traffic is not limited to normal business hours. Drivers come and go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our truck traffic is not only comprised of outbound shipments of our product, but also inbound raw material. Additionally, S&S Precast serves as a storage hub for one of our largest customers. We ship and receive their materials on a regular basis. The company's freight sales account for more than 30% of our total sales. If we are challenged with restricted access to our facility, it would negatively affect our profit margins. The drop and hook method would no longer be an option. We would be forced to resort to live loading, resulting to delivery delays. The precast industry is driven by schedules and budgets. Delivery delays can potentially devastating to our company. For example, if we fail to meet the requirements outlined in our current contract for the Milwaukee Zoo interchange, it could result in liquidated damages as high as $50,000 per day. This is only one of the 12 contracts. Additionally, the same contract has been active for approximately 3 years, with 2 more years remaining. We committed to the freight rates of 2013 when the contract was executed. If we cannot utilize our current loading strategy, we would have no choice but to pay for drivers empty mileage to return for reload or to use broker freight. Either option would affect the project's budget by 20% at this year's cost. For future years, we have no way to speculate what our cost factors will be. Furthermore, without the readily available trailers, our equipment operators will no longer be able to load trucks at his discretion. Our shipping and receiving hours are from 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. If we choose to pay for the driver's empty miles, they would be returning from the delivery in Milwaukee around 1 to 2 p.m. Not only does their arrival time coincide with the end of Braun's first shift, it will also only allow for a maximum of 2.5 hours time frame to reload all the trucks for the following day's deliveries. It takes anywhere from 45 minutes to 2 hours to load a truck, depending on the complexity of the panels. This would necessitate a second or possibly third skill operator to assist in loading. Another concern in regards to restricted areas of potential for concrete to exceed its time limits. We have a 90 minutes to completely unload a concrete truck from the time it is dispatched. IMI allows for 15 minutes of travel time from their plant to ours. The concrete field test takes approximately 20 minutes, provided the concrete passes on their first try. Only the concrete within specs, it takes approximately 45 minutes to place the concrete. If there was a congestion at the proposed gate, that would only allow 10 extra minutes before concrete would be unusable. Like most small businesses, we are always working towards expanding into other markets. Our product line diversification would likely involve structures requiring oversized loads with escorts. The products require a far more stringent shipping schedule. Again, restricted access would be limiting our ability to be competitive in the market. In a hyper-competitive market, our business cannot withstand declining profit margins and stifle growth, allowing a company that has no vested interest in ours to dictate critical aspects of our daily operations would ultimately lead to the dismay of our business. Given the size and configuration of the transportation vehicles, County Road 100, West, is not a viable and safe access point due to the fact there is no acceleration or deceleration lanes for the large trucks. In addition, given the wide and large nature of the vehicles, our transportation experts advise us that there is insufficient space for more than one vehicle at a time to access through County Road 100 West. Megan Allen, General Manager. Thank you, Megan. And I need to correct what I said.
All right, can I take a look at that? Just a couple. Brad, one question that struck me is the way the access agreement is currently worded, the constant access from, we said, 6 to 8, and that would be on notice 24 hours. Given what Megan has reported about the drop and load system and how that may entail significant after-hours traffic, what could be done to ameliorate that concern?
I don't... whatever Richard and Megan need, we will do. This is not anything that's going to affect their business. I've assured Richard of that on the phone, and I've assured Megan of that. Talk about limited access and delays. The train's going to run just like the train's been running. And they have my word and our assurance on that. So while I'm appreciative that they have maybe some doubts, I don't buy into what they're talking about with regard to delay and inconvenience. That's not going to happen.
Well, I think it's important to point out that we too have that same type of business with these drop shipments after hours. And for those of you that live around our campus, we're taking on trailers of vehicles at all hours of nights. We do allow truckers to do drop shipments throughout the weekends, after hours, and that will not change with our business. So, and that is the important thing to point out, is that this is 24/7 access. We'll have somebody there manning that gate that when a carrier comes in, or whether it be one of their trucks that needs to haul out product, they will have access to that road. We're not going to stipulate that after 8 p.m. all business ceases, and that's throughout the weekend as well.
Jim?
It sounds like it could be a win-win for both of them. They're going to get free security for their drop ship. I mean, when they go out the gates, I'm sure there's going to be some way you can check. And it's going to be, I don't know, the security thing could be a real asset for S&S, I think.
That's right. Do you believe that's true?
No, that's
not true. Which, you're Mr. Jim. Johnson said that the train would run as the train's run. Do you believe that would be accurate?
No. I thought that he said that it would require adequate notice if we had deliveries coming in after hours.
I believe he did say that.
If it's 24/7, then why would we need to provide notice?
Well, a contradiction.
No, counsel, it's not. All you have to do is just tell us what trucks you have coming in. We'll let them in. You know that to be true.
If a concrete truck comes through there, we'll let the guard know in advance that that's a policy. Let him through.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, one of the issues that I was going to raise, and I apologize for my late involvement, I just found out about this matter late Thursday afternoon. Spoke with Mr. Tankersley on Friday morning, I believe it was. I was going to file a motion to continue, but I realize you require 48 hours, and so I just decided to come up and say hi and chat. Obviously, I've not had a chance to chat with Mr. Johnson about this at all. I think, obviously, there's a disagreement as to whether it's beneficial or not to SMS precast. And so I guess what I would initially request tonight is, why don't we take 30 days or 60 days, while Mr. Johnson might try to find if we can come up with a way to make sure that the train runs as it does, and see what we can do so that we can all avoid some potentially unpleasant actions in the future. That would be my first request this evening.
Terry, can I comment on that?
Yes.
I understand. I'm sorry, I didn't get your last name.
Schaefer.
Where Mr. Schaefer is coming from, but Brad reached out to SNS a long time ago.
I wrote
I appreciate Megan's position, and that's why I worked with Brad for as long as I'm trying to come up with a way to do this that would be as friendly to SNS's practices as possible. But it isn't Mr. Johnson's or the commissioner's fault that the attorney only learned about this now. We first approached SNS about this in June, and I know Brad has been in communication with SNS and tried to off and on since then. So while I appreciate where Megan is coming from and where Mr. Schaefer is coming from, there was ample opportunity for this conversation to be held prior to after this public hearing, which we've already rescheduled because we wanted to try to work with SNS and other concerned parties before presenting this to the commissioners.
Look, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would still ask for a decision on your request, if I might.
Is there any more public comment?
You know, being at Plymouth too for 4 years, it seems to me like it's putting an extra burden on SNS to be able to have to contact these people to say, I got a truck coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning. They have to be doing that for every truck that comes in. They don't know sure what time it's coming in. And we had that problem with trucks coming into our place. You know, we call them, they say they'd be there. Excuse me, they say they'd be there. They may not show up for 3 or 4 hours. I'm sure that same thing could happen with her.
Exactly.
In the roadway access agreement, it states that SNS, Rosenbaum County, may have 24-hour access upon reasonable notice. Has Braun defined reasonable access, or is that still a reasonable notice, or is that up for conversation? I think that may be the crux of the issue is what, and I think that sounds like one of Megan's concerns is what constitutes reasonable access. Because if she has to call you or somebody at 2 in the morning and say, we have a truck coming in now, I would myself say that's probably not a reasonable expectation that Megan has to wake up because sure. A truck is getting in town.
Well, I agree with that. That if there's some way that, I mean, she's got set a transit agency that there's got to be some way to separate her trucks from, you know, any other truck that comes through there, if it's a transit company you use, let us know who it is. I don't think this is going to be a...
I think Mr. Johnson is part of the problem for individual truckers.
Yeah.
And I think we all understand that the difficulty in that can be. They can have a breakdown, they can have a delivery problem, they can have a tie-down problem, they can have a variety of problems. And that's one of the issues that I was hoping that perhaps we could explore in the next 30, 60 days and try to come up with a resolution. That's my request to continue this.
Brad, follow up along those lines. As you've said, Braun really has not concretely defined what the plans are. Tentatively, is the manning of the gate only going to be for certain hours, or how is that going to be set up? Or let's say it's at 2 a.m., who is going to be responsible for opening that gate and letting the truck in?
Well, I don't know. We haven't, we haven't made all the details
right.
yet. But there will be either a guard there or a guard in the vicinity. And as part of that reasonable notice, Megan, if you tell your drivers to say they're delivery to SNS Precast, that will be the instruction to the guard to let them go through. That's all they have to do is just mention that.
Okay.
I don't think this is going to, there's not a line of semis waiting to go through there at all hours of the night, so that would be our offer. If they just say they're going there, then we'll let them through.
Okay, and Mr. Johnson, how would a driver contact the guard?
By pulling up there.
Yeah, well, the guard may not be there, according to what you said.
I said that may be the case. It also may be manned 24/7. If that's a difference maker, we'll see it as manned 24/7, and they would be able to just tell the guard where they're going. If that's what you guys would like, we'll do it.
Bob, you have.
Yeah, you know, it's not broken. You don't need to fix it. You want to put this up there? I drive through. They've got these gates and stuff. Am I trespassing?
If the road is vacated, yes.
Well, this is what I'm saying. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, but it's kind of, I go through, I go back and behind them too. It's back to my ground. I keep tracking their stuff. I go around, watch S&S, see if there's any commotion. You know, but now you're sitting up down and you're going to be the chief mogul. Nobody can do anything unless they go through Braun's operation. I mean, I'm not against Braun.
Yes.
I'm not against Braun. But what I'm saying, if it ain't broke, no. It works fine now.
This is my part.
I've worked back in that area since 1990. I've watched the traffic. I've watched the speeders. There's people that go. They drag race up and down that road. They don't pay any attention. There's unloaders, skid steers, whatever you want to call them, coming in and out. There's semis in and out. I've heard semis using J-brakes because they're going too fast. There needs to be control on the speed limit because there are classes from Braun's going across from plant to plant that have anywhere from 15 to 35 people that are trying to get across the road, trying to perform work. And I watched it for years. The traffic at high time of traffic is not a desirable situation. Unless you can plant a police car there 24/7, you've got to have a way of regulating it or somebody's going to get hurt. And that's the key to me is the safety and the security of it. And I don't want to see somebody get hit by a semi. I don't want to see somebody get a skid steer. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. And it's got to be controlled a little bit better because everybody's in a hurry today. And it's just not safe the way it is.
Can I make another comment? Because we have first and second kindergartners that can go across 35 with much more traffic that people slow down for. If you've got to put up stop signs, you've got to put up speed bumps, put somebody out there with a little stop sign for them to walk across. I don't think it's fair to take away the access to that road. We've got to drive like a mile to get back out to 14 if that road's closed. And I just think that it's ridiculous, personally.
I know you, when you say you have to drive a mile, you're saying you're going to 100 West.
You have to go to
100
West or go clear up through town.
Have you looked at taking either this road just to Main Street or 1/10 of a mile farther east to County Road 50 West and then taking that up curving by the EMS station?
And that's what we used to have to do, and it is not a lot of fun. Yeah, you can do it. And yes, we will do it if the road gets closed. But I'm voicing my extreme displeasure taking away a straight shot. We don't go zooming. We go 15, we go 10 if the trucks are out there. But I'm just saying that they're only out there for a very limited time crossing that road back and forth. And if the kids can manage to go across 35, I don't see why grown adults can't do the same.
I'd like to get a little guidance to my client. You're acting as the finder of fact, if you will, or the court, in this decision-making process. Ultimately, whatever you do may be reviewed by a court, so let's just follow the statutes. I'm not trying to keep my mouth shut, which is against my profession's nature, but I don't have a dog in this fight. I want you to make a decision based on your best judgment. I'm friendly with Mr. Shin, he was my former neighbor, client, and I'm
neighbors of the petitioning party, so I've got no opinion on it. But the statutes dictate what you take into consideration and then make a decision on those statutes, okay? So that is, first and foremost, let's just get some of the things out of the way. Number one, Vaughn Corporation or the land trust that owns it, I'm sorry, the name of it.
It was BLDQ.
Vaughn Land Corporation certainly has a right to petition under Indiana Code 367312, which they did back on August 3rd. So absolutely have standing to do so. To my knowledge, they provided the notices that are required by the statute to the adjoining landowners, and that notice was published according to Indiana Code in the paper. So those steps were taken. My office received what I would view to be a remonstrance, and that the reason we're using that term is because Indiana Code 367313 says that you have to file a remonstrance if you want to be objected to this. You can take as much information from public comment as you want if it helps you make your decision, but officially, if you're going to object to this, you need to file a remonstrance. The only one I know of that has done that is S&S Precast. I got it by way of an email back that was filed August 10th, and then Megan showed up here today with an addition to that. But that's technically the only one that I've seen. I'm not aware of any other remonstrance was filed. Okay. So by statute, that's the only thing you should be considering. And that would, the reason you can object is set forth in the statute. One, the vacation would hinder the growth, orderly development of a unit or neighborhood in which it is located or to which it is contiguous. I'm not sure that's applicable. The vacation would make access to the lands of the great person by means of publicly difficult or inconvenient. I think that's exactly their point, or that's the argument, perhaps. So if you're gonna, that's number two. Number three, a vacation would hinder the public's access to the church, school, or other public building or place. I'm not, I guess there's some argument there, but nobody's filed a remonstrance on that point. The vacation would hinder the use of the public way by the neighborhood in which it is located or to which it is contiguous. Once again, I think nobody's really filing offers on that. So really you're here on S&S Precast grounds under 367313 number 2, if you want to take over that statute. About that, I just want you to make sure that those are really the grounds here to consider and make a decision based on that. Why don't you do that? Because it's going to be potentially reviewed by a court. I hope that's not the case. I hope we can have some discussion. I have no doubt that Ron has every intention to make this as easy as possible for everybody.
Megan?
But also understand that.
If a continuance were to be, and Mr. Schaefer and Brad and other involved parties were able to come up with some way of very explicitly assuring you continued access with no more than a minute delay on in and out, would that suffice?
I think I'd have to chat with.
Well, obviously, I understand. Is that a possibility?
I think the issue that strikes me as most problematic is that the train won't run as it always has, according to Mr. Johnson, because we all know how problems arise. You know, security guards are supposed to be present, but they're on break, or a security guard is sick and no one showed up that evening, or whatever. The transportation issue is, you know, those folks, they're going to go up with their time if they're stuck there overnight or for a day. And it causes some real problems. The young man who raised the issue in the back and said, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, has a really valid point in our opinion. So I'm saying that I think we could explore some options and we may find out an option. You know, for example, the trap. You know, if the traffic issue of walking across the street is an issue, let's build a bridge. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, it's an alternative. That's my point. So we haven't even, I have not had the discussion, the opportunity to sit down and have a discussion about what the options are. But I think it's, from my purview, I think Mr. Tankersley might agree that it's always prudent to try to sit down and chat before you get started down a path that might lead to other issues.
Counselor, you're welcome to talk for the last 2.5 months with that.
Mr. Johnson, I'm not chatting with you at all in the last 2 hours.
No, I'm talking about Mr. Schoenemaker.
My understanding of the conversations have been pretty much this is our plan, take it or leave.
No, that's not the case at all.
That's what's been relayed to me.
But I'm not making a motion to put this on tape until January 18th. We'll have to 2 new commissioners, 2 council members, and you, Brad, and Megan's lawyer can get together and work everything out. So everybody will know what's up. Would that be too long, Brad?
Yeah, I think we're ready to do it today. And yes, we will work it out. But I told you about that. We will.
When you put your gates up, have you considered putting a remote in the driver's truck so it wouldn't have to wait up people?
If it's done through remote, and if she can tell us which drivers, yes, we can do it that way. Absolutely.
The problem we have is it's not right. Consistent with the same.
We're going to be how many different drivers?
There could be 100 or 200 different drivers.
I have a place that uses scanners with the barcode. You can fax the barcode, wave under the scanner, and they have record of who it is with the barcode. I don't know if that's something that would work or not. Well, they could fax this forward to the driver that's going to be coming in. I mean, it's fairly simple.
All right, you're going to see. They have every truck who's going to help. No, open some closes on there.
We can consider all those things, but I thought the simplest way to do it was tell them they're going to SNS Precast and run through.
Excuse me. Somebody back there?
My name is Shea Caston. I live at the corner of 60 and 100. Obviously, I mean, can't fit. Has there been a traffic study done, a professional one, or is this just going off his numbers? I mean, because I can sit out there and say there have been 900 cars. You know, it just seems pretty shady to me.
It's also beyond the scope of what the statute requires for this. This was something Braun Mobility did on their own in order just to have some data. Whether it meets Mr. Schaefer's or Megan and Ms. Allen's standards or not, it was beyond the mandated scope of what they had to do. No, it hasn't been professionally done, but they were not legally required to do that either.
But before a decision should be made, it certainly would not be a reason that would be done.
I think it would be.
Mr. Johnson, they can't manage the other business. Look at you, young man.
Brady, I don't think you can have any discussion until you get a second on that motion.
I think the motion died. Motion died for lack of second, Bob.
I did hear that. Thank you.
Well, then I guess I have another issue that I need to raise. In preparing for tonight's hearing, it's my understanding that one of the members of the commission is an employee of Braun Corporation. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
We would view that as a conflict.
Well, I have. This has been an issue. Let me go back a little bit. It was me that brought up this Braun Corporation over a year ago, whenever we had town hall meetings. I see guys almost get hit every day. We had a fire drill here a month ago. We have hundreds of people out there. It's a very dangerous situation. I filed a report down at the clerk's office, a conflict. No, sir, I'm not getting anything out of this. I filed my report because I knew somebody would bring it up.
Well,
got it covered.
I am not alleging, sir, that you're making any remuneration out of it. I'm raising the fact that I think that you would have if not an actual conflict, an apparent conflict by taking any action on this action because of your employment.
I don't believe I've got a conflict there, sir.
I understand that you may not. I'm raising it. The record needs to reflect it because if there's a challenge, it needs to be reflected. So that's why I'm raising it, sir. I don't mean any insult by it. I'm just raising it because I believe that's my client's purview to raise. And Mr. Chairman, I guess I would ask for a ruling by the chair as to whether the conflict exists in the chair's opinion.
Pardon? He is the president of the board.
Pardon? Then I see a bigger problem.
I will entertain a motion to allow this request petition of wrong corporation.
I will make that motion to proceed forward with this ordinance request.
I'll second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you. Mr. Schaefer, as I'm sure you are aware, pursuant to IC 3673-12E, your client does have the right to appeal to the circuit court within 30 days.
I certainly am,
I expect Jim Gould to say what he did. I did not expect Mr. Gould to say what he did. Can I get you guys to sign the ordinance while I'm still up here before while all the commotion is going on? It wasn't clear if Bud opposed that or abstained.
Huh?
Not clear if Mr. Crone opposed or abstained.
I don't know.
For what? Who is that? It wasn't clear to me if you objected or abstained, but I don't know if you want to sign that or write that you abstained or objected or however you want to.
Wait till it clears a little bit here.
Sheila, can you go ahead quickly and attest this and I'll get copies to you?
Yes.
And take care of everything?
Yes.
But, yeah. We dealt with everything with the. I did not get that second survey intentionally. I misunderstood you. Greg said he talked to you. We did. That was my misunderstanding. I didn't realize. But
back on track.
I do apologize. I did not intend to.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
To get back on track, I want to make a motion. We adjourn the hearing portion of the meeting. Give me a second for that.
I have a motion, a second to adjourn the hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. You stand adjourned. Now we'll go back to our commissioner meeting, regular session. And where are we at? Brad Bunnell.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How's Brad?
Great. I'll try to be brief so you guys can keep moving here. Okay. October transfer station report. The averages were great. It wasn't an overall busy month, but it was very acceptable.
Can't shut it all the way.
In progress as far as being things that have been done out there. We've got our stone driveway in beside the scales now.
Yeah.
I want to thank Terry and his crew for helping out that and keeping the cost down.
Mm-hmm.
They had some material that they'd was able to reuse from another job site and it worked out real well for us. It'll help with the flow of traffic considerably.
I rode on that new drive they've installed, the highway department help with Brad. I think it's going to be a fantastic
move in the right direction and reorganizing some of the flow of traffic out there. And thanks to the highway department and their crew. And good job, Brad, on those suggestions.
Thank you. Our new portable dock will be here after Thanksgiving. That funds came from the Solid Waste District for the purchase of that. Everyone's welcome to come out and look at it after we get it. I didn't have any major expenses this month. Actually, it's going to leave me a little bit of room in the budget. I would like to purchase another open top container. I have two bids. We already have two of the open tops that YAFHAB has made for us, and they work out real well. They being considerably cheaper, I would like to look into purchasing that one. That would come out of my equipment fund.
I would make a motion for give Brad the permission to come in contract with YAFHAB Acquisitions LLC. In reference to a 35 cubic yard square front open top container for a price of $49.21, pending council's approval.
This will come out of my budget that I already have approved.
Okay.
However, I do have money left in a line item for transfer station hauling of trash that I would like to buy another one, but I got to get approved through the council.
Okay. You have my permission, my motion there to move forward on that. But you agree?
Is it that much different in these prices?
It's a considerable amount, yes. But the qualities, they're spec the same.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a motion and a second to purchase the open top from YAFHAB for $4,921 versus the other quote was $6,600. I want to make that clear to the public. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
I have nothing else at this time, unless you guys do.
I'm good.
I'm good there. Brad, thank you.
Thanks. Holly Bandler. You want to talk from there or
throw it from us?
That's fine.
Throw it from to us.
We come here.
This is the approved contract that Kevin had read previously, only it's in a little bit.
Yeah, mine was a nice binder.
I know. Oh, wow. You didn't get that. But this is Ed, and he is with Ed Song.
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Our town council approved it last Monday night, so now I'm back just for signatures. And the one I think that Bud has is the one, yes, that we're going to sign.
I have the sign.
All three of you need to sign it.
Okay.
Move to sign the contract with Exxon upon Holly Vander Ray, the assessor's request.
Motion second to approve the signing of the contract. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Today's the 21st, gentlemen.
Yep.
Is that a statement?
I'm just giving a fact.
Okay.
I'm such a block. And then, Sheila, if you want to go ahead and keep one of the ones in the binder, what will happen is Ed will take it back for the president of the company, the one that's not in a binder.
You're not the president?
Come on. I'm just a TV delivery guy.
And then after Brian Luther signs it, they will send it on to the Department of Local Government Finance for their attorney to also read it and approve it. And then it'll come back to us. So
it's on a contract if four lawyers in there.
I guess. Those are the standards by which we have to live with in our office.
Yeah, one more.
I'll
get one more.
Yeah. And thank you for not
making me
make that step.
Let's get out of here. All right, Holly.
All right.
Wait, how many copies do you get here?
Well, she needs to sign them all, too. She has to sign them.
Everybody sign this one?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Does she want the editor? No? Okay.
They took that away from her.
Three signatures.
You don't get to attest to their signature.
Sounds
good.
Do
you
want one
of these tonight, though, or
just give it to you tomorrow?
Well,
I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that's
all.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks for making it. And if you didn't know, there are deer out there, so when you're driving home.
I'm driving a rental car.
Laura.
Okay. R.B. Wallers.
Thank you, sir.
Did you guys sign the ordinance you passed?
I'm on you.
Yes.
Yeah.
They did. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sirs?
How you doing, sir?
Good.
I want to give you some updates where we're at. IT audit started today. We're about a third of the way done. Come tomorrow, we should be about 90%, and then come Wednesday, we'll have it inputted into our new system, and I'll get a copy to Sheila at that point. Point-to-point access, we've talked about getting that put in this week. It looks like that'll be pushed back to next week or the week after. You want to elaborate a little bit on that point-to-point, since we discussed it last meeting, I think it was? Okay. So the point-to-point access, what we're looking at doing is with the county highway, with the CDC, with recycling, and with EMS, right now we pay about $60 a piece for internet at each one of those locations. What this is going to allow us to do is actually do a Wi-Fi connection between all of those locations and be able to actually allow us to have data traffic back to our servers, allow them to have internet access. Allow them to have all the capabilities that we have here at the courthouse and the Justice Center at those locations.
And I'll add to that, our last commissioner's meeting was talked about looking at running fiber optics from here to the highway department. This is another method of getting the same effects done, a greater savings. So this is in place of the fiber optics request, even though fiber optics is great, but this will satisfy it, and we're going to be able to transfer EMS, CDC, and the highway department, so four facilities being taken care of with roughly how much?
It's going to be right around $2,000.
Roughly $2,000, thus, and cost savings overall. So.
Yeah, the cost savings overall for the year, for next year, we'll actually save about $800, $900 next year.
Strong work on that. Great job.
Had Laserfish come in last week. We went through all the training with them. They're training me with the flow charts to get up to speed. We should have automation done at the end of this month. So everything will be in place. I'm already starting to work with some of the departments to get them up and going with digital. I've got the Sheriff's Department there. They're actually looking into it also. I went over and talked to them. I had Mick from Laserfish go over and talk to them. And it sounds to me like they're excited about going that direction also. When I talked to the health department, they were the same way, that they're actually looking at going that direction also. So the more we get into this, I think more departments will come on board and move that direction. Those departments aren't there yet, but we're working on it. By saying that, we're going to have the automation side of it done at the end of this month. I have talked to, sent emails to all the commissioners, talked to you individually about taking the archive department and bringing those into the IT department, absorbing that department into the IT department. What that would allow us to do, we're looking at hiring an IT technician next year, part-time.
what that would allow them to do is actually work with Janet in that department, learn that department. Janet at some point will retire, and what my goal would be at that point is take that IT technician, bring them on full-time into the archive department, and also use them for IT, so use them in two places. But the main benefit of this would be to train them in Janet's position so that when she decides to retire, we have somebody to do the replacement. So I'd like to actually look at absorbing that department into the IT department.
Jimmy, you have any questions on that request?
No. Albie and I talked about it, and I think it's probably the direction we should lean.
I make a motion that the... just had a mental block here. The... what is her department? Sheila, what's her department called? Janice.
Yes, microfilm.
Microfilm to fall under the guidance of the IT department. That'd be my motion. Kevin, do you follow what I'm saying?
I follow the, I'm not sure we have to call it microfilm anymore, do we?
She still does microfilm.
Yeah,
digital.
For some of the younger
digital
people.
Records department or something. All right. Whatever you want to call it.
It's a makes sense.
Job description.
Okay.
Okay. I have a motion and a second to combine the microfilm with IT department. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, RB.
Is that it? Nothing else?
Oh, man, we're tonight.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'll follow up with you tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. Jeff Johnston.
Jeff, you still here?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you so much. This is going to be a lot briefer than normal.
Not acceptable.
I got, I sent out a request for three quotes for the bathroom repair, sewage pipe repairs. I got two back. I'm presenting those two this evening. The first one is from Malco Construction out of Francisville. This is for removal of the concrete above the drainage pipes, replacement of the drainage pipes with PVC and connections, and then filling it back in with concrete.
Is there anything that's going to be done with the dirt that may...
Any fill or any of that's going to be replaced and fixed. For Malcolm Construction, we're looking at $12,000. There might be additional cost if the concrete is thicker than 4 inches or if the sewer pipe is deeper than 12 inches below the concrete. I don't believe it is, but that's in here just in case.
Okay.
The second one that I have to present is from White's General Contracting. This is, he came back in and reevaluated after the bathroom renovation portion was put on hold. This one's for $19,430. This one does not include additional cost, just covers the whole thing. So you've got one that listed as additional cost and the other one that added it in.
Is there a time frame when they think they can get to this?
Not yet. That is, they are both aware that this is an emergency type thing, so as soon as I get the word which way to go, I'll get them in as quickly as we can.
I'm under the understanding that the EMA office will need to be relocated for this project. Well, I'm also of the understanding that there's some concerns that placement of offices out at the highway department aren't allowed, possibly. Now, would that be a temporarily a viable option, or is it not an option at all? If it's not an option at all, we need to look for
location. Can I just add, the complete work should take no longer than 2 weeks from beginning to end.
Okay.
In that time, She could be relocated out into her, what does she call that, EOC area?
Okay.
Is that what that's called?
Yes,
sure. She could be relocated out there. We don't have to move all of her equipment. That shouldn't be necessary. The two inner walls in her office, that the T-walls, maintenance will be removing those prior to the work to be done, so it'll go even quicker. Okay. Now, if we run into issues and a move for a longer period of time needs to happen, then you guys would be informed of that, and then a decision could be made then. But as far as job complete, beginning to completion, it shouldn't take longer than 2 weeks.
All right.
Before we get any further in this, Joe, you want to talk to Mr. Johnson here a little bit about what you relayed to me about drainage, because you know more about it than I do. If you'd kind of tell him your thoughts.
Right here behind Jeff. You've got contaminated soil there. You'll never get it all out. You'll never, somewhere down the road you'll have a smell pop back up. Part of you doing this, you need to put in something. They do it for redox, and it could be the same thing. Basically, any backfill that you put in will be granular so that air can move through it. You'll put a perforated pipe under there and run it to the outside. Or you could put some sort of a fan on it, or even natural airflow. But remove air from underneath that concrete, because you'll never seal that concrete where you cut your trench. Those joints will always be open and will allow a smell to come up through the...
So you just need to put in an additional vent pipe?
Yeah, it's a vent pipe is all it is. It's very similar to what radon... You look at specifications for radon and that'll tell you what you need.
Okay.
And we're talking 2 to 3 inch perforated pipe, which the expense is not going to be.
Right, right. I'll add that in with whoever you guys choose to go with.
But thank you, Joe, for that.
Questions, Bud?
I can make a motion to go with the Malco.
I'll second that motion.
I have a motion and second to go with Malco Construction on the repair of the sewer line in the courthouse. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Last thing I've got. I spoke with Terry Ruff from County Highway about his custodian he has that retired from out there. He doesn't have one right now. He told me that the custodian worked like 5 to 8 hours a week to clean their building and stock their paper supplies and that sort of thing. He came to me and asked me what we could do to refill that position, because finding someone that wants a part-time job and works 5 to 8 hours a week is next to impossible. After talking with him, I'd like to find out what the chances are of turning that into a regular part-time position that would go to the maintenance / custodial department, and then we would take that building on as far as the custodial duties.
I support that thought process, Jeff, but it's not going to be us as the final deciding factor upon that. It'll need to go to the council for additional funding request, and then dot the final I to that, but I would move to approve your request at the commissioner's level, followed up with the pending council's final blessing. Pardon.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So give me a quick update on the jail. Anything? Roofs all done?
Roofs
everything good? No leaks?
No, not that I know of yet. We've not gotten any reports of leaks.
Okay.
We've got the padded cell, shower, and sink and toilet units updated to the new system.
Okay.
We're waiting on the other cells to be cleaned out so we can get in and do those.
Okay.
So that's coming along good. We've got all of the units switched over to run for colder temperatures, and I think that's, and we had the elevator down for a little while, but it's back up now. There's a bad switch.
Annex, I was there today.
Annex, we had heating problems this morning. There was a bad valve that's been switched out and the heat's on. Okay. The courthouse has a heating issue too. The expansion tank in the basement is no longer working. We have another expansion tank coming.
Okay. In the annex, it seems to be a yearly thing. I don't have a strong fix other than ripping all the systems out and throwing in something new. Is this a long-term idea that the next commissioners need to look at and council is we need to look at the whole way we are heating and cooling this facility?
Yes. The what we're doing now is we're just keeping it running. The heating system itself isn't bad, but the way that the pipes run through the building is. So you've got certain areas of the building that warms, whereas certain other areas don't.
Correct.
Take the building inspector's office, for instance.
Correct.
But the boiler itself is a good one. And if we could just put some money into the individual offices to get the system working well, I think we'd be okay. That's a cheap way to do it. The expense over there is going to be the air conditioning system, because you've got an air conditioning system that I've got HVAC guys that come in there that's been in the field for 30 years, and they haven't seen this one this old since they've been doing it. So, and we have problems with it every year. So, and it's all pneumatically controlled. It's not electronic. So you open up the control box, and you've got 500 little hoses to all these different connections, and it's very difficult to work on. And I've been told that there are drop-in replacements that run on low voltage, and the control over it is so much better. The efficiency is so much better. We are so inefficient over there. We're fighting the inefficiency as far as the county energy bills go by putting LED lights in everywhere we can. I just got some for the parking lot that is a third of the energy use, but five times the lifespan. So, but the biggest energy expense over there would be the air conditioner, and it's also the biggest maintenance expense over there.
Well, I would recommend that the first of the year approach the new commissioners and council and see what you can have a one-year plan or something like that to hone that in.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Melanie Krogowski.
Melanie, come on up. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. I'm going to move this a little bit closer. Can you guys hear in the back there, please? Let us know. Thank you, Melanie.
I'm here to try to get some answers or even a complaint. I don't know how about doing it. I have been to the health department meeting already, and I wasn't very too happy with the results that I got from them, and I figured I'd take a step higher and take it upon you guys to see where I could stand at, or if any suggestions would be helpful. I have took notes on some of the things that I do want to discuss. If I can present them, I would
go ahead.
I appreciate it. I don't know if any of you guys are aware of the B system mycotoxin or not, but it's like Lyme disease. It's a colon inhibitor. And I have been diagnosed with babesius microtia, and plus there was another patient that was diagnosed with that too. And well, I'll just start from the beginning. I went to the Pulaski County Health Board meeting on 10/24 of this year. I called to try to get the minutes of that meeting on the 9th of November, the 3rd of November, and the 31st of October, and Terry Hansen never seems to get them to me. Until today, when I had to go to pick them up downstairs in the audit office, and because Just please bear with me.
You're fine.
I am not getting nowhere with the Lord of Help. And it seems, and it's sad for me to have to go pay someone when I'm on a fixed income anyway, when I should have, after all these phone calls trying to get these meds, I had to go in and pay for that. I mean, I needed these meds for this meeting tonight.
Okay.
And when I went to the health board meeting, they didn't want what we discussed about Lyme's disease and Babesia's microtea out. They didn't want it spread it out in Pulaski County. Well, I am a very concerned citizen, and it is here in Pulaski County. I was one of the 14 patients that was treated or had to go to the hospital and get blood work done. I was tested for Babesia's microtea, and another patient was too. And the other patients were treated as Lyme disease. As of right now, I got a grandson that's got Lyme disease. I got a grandson that's got Lyme disease. But the health department does not want it to be spread. I don't understand that at all. My concerns are overlooks the minutes. Frankly, it feels like I was pushed aside among the community, to which they need to know. Everyone in this community needs to know how bad the Lyme and the Babesia's is. I'm not just talking for myself here. I know at least 14 people were diagnosed by the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. Now, what I need to know is if them 14 people were told about their results from the CDC, because, and the other person, other than myself, that's got the biggest microtea, did he get told to, nor her told, no results back until I picked up my medical records and I found out that my primary doctor was Gary Brady at that time, was fired by Dr. Curtis. Is this a rumor? Is this rumor true about my doctor? And was I do still consider him as my doctor because he's the one that diagnosed me with it? That if he was not told to attend the meeting at the health board, you know, because he wasn't there. And as for me, I am very sick with an enlarged liver. My stomach lining is being ate up or eroded, as you would call it. Severe stomach ulcers, headaches all the time. Plus my diabetes is going wacko. I did ask for help for me from the health board and Mr. Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y, suggested that I hire a lawyer to help me figure out what my next step should be. I am disabled anyway, and I can't afford a lawyer. I am so worried about this community and myself that this does need to be addressed. And the Pulaski Board of Health isn't wanting it spread around when all the people are suffering. Something needs to be done because I know how I suffer. There is days where I'm planning from the time I go to bed to the time I go to get up in the morning, all day long, laying, suffering, hurting. And now I've got the letter that I wrote to the board, the health board. If you guys would like to see that, I can show that to you.
Did you give them the letter?
They didn't ask for the letter.
And what did you see in the minutes?
In the minutes, They just asked me to speak for 5 minutes. They gave me 5 minutes to speak and tell them exactly all what was wrong with me. I was bitten by a black-legged tick, and that is in this community. I live on the Tippecanoe River, and I know years ago, and if someone was to Google it years ago, it may not came out until 2008, but years ago they did test here in on the Tippecanoe River that they found that tick. But a lot of doctors, since Dr. Brady's no longer a doctor now, don't want to see me because they don't know how to deal with it. They say it's not in this region. I've been to 2 infectious disease control doctors now. And I will always have babesias. It will never go away. I'm just worried about just not just myself, but for the community here too in Plaskett County. I don't know if it's in the other counties for sure or not. Don't have no evidence of that. But I do got some showing where the minutes on, well, when I went to the Plaskett Health Department, I got the whole packet. And it was like they were prepared for me. Like they had already knew that I was coming, because they had information about the babesias and Lyme disease, and I've done so much research on that. And they've even got the Indiana State Department of Health, you know, dated September 15th to Dr. Rex Allman, Plaskett County Health Officer. And I was tested back in June 27th to see if I did have babesiosis. And I didn't get my results to even know that I did until I picked my medical records up. But in that process, Dr. Gary Bray, which is no longer in practice at this time, he lost his license for treating me, and probably amongst other people too. So I'm not just here for myself. I'm here for the community too. And I feel for the other people that does got this. I've got, the Indiana State Department of Health here. That,
and what she's talking about is the testing that was done on 14 patients and the results from what they sent back that was presented at the health board meeting on the 24th of October. That was what she's referring to.
I was also told that if you are tested and positive for babesias from the Center of Disease Control, that you are supposed to be notified within 72 hours. I noticed on my CDC reports that I've got here that they're dated July the 21st or July 16th. See, I'm not with it. I mean, since I've had this, I've had to deal with a lot since my doctor is no longer my doctor no more, and I'm in a rut because I'm on a fixed income. I'm disabled anyway. But I'm not just doing this for myself. I'm doing it for all the community in Plaskett County. But it does show that I am tested positive for it. And I was wondering, you know, in the minutes of October 24th, it said that
Tim Murray
had shown me at the end of this where they had signed it.
It says Melanie asked what the health department was going to do for her because of her illness. She feels it is the board's responsibility to her. Mr. Murray suggested that she hire a lawyer to help figure out what her next step will be. That was what's in the health board's amendments.
I would, Terry, you want any comments?
Well, first of all, she did not receive the minutes because they were not signed yet by Dr. Curtis.
Correct.
They still aren't. Well, I'm going to have to send them to her via certified mail, so she needs to sign for those.
Okay.
And as far as the CDC report, you can see where it's dated from the State Department of Health. That's the date we got it. We got it in September. And at the health department, we don't diagnose. All we do is receive positive reports and follow them. And if we don't get a positive report, we don't have anything to do with it. We're being blamed, I guess. We don't have any part of paying her bill. I mean, I guess we don't understand what Melanie wants us to do. We have to follow the CDC guidelines for the State Department of Health. That's who we work with. And so whether or not their guidelines are right, I don't know. I know 14 people were tested, and some of them had low levels of positivity, but they had to have so many points in order to be currently positive. Of course, I'm not a medical person, so I'm just being told this. And out of those 14, none of those showed current positive for babesia than what we're told in the reports. Through the state epidemiologist, the state health commissioner, our health officer. I'm just here to represent them. Like I said, we're just here to answer any questions we can. We're not trying to cause anybody any problems. We don't know what's expected of us, I guess. We're just doing what our board is telling us to do. We just work there. And the board didn't understand, I guess, what Melanie was wanting them to do. She thought it was our responsibility since she got bit because she lives on the river. Possibly so. And I do know that there was a babesia tick diagnosed, or they found it, in 2002. Out by the state park during the first day of deer season.
And that's the report that I handed out.
That's been 14 years ago. We haven't had any since that have tested positive.
Have we done anything?
That come through my office.
Has the county done anything?
We send ticks in all the time. People bring ticks in. If they're alive, we can have them tested.
Okay.
And we have never had it. I'm not saying they're not here. Trust me. We're not saying anybody's lying or nobody has it. Not at all. We're just saying we can't follow up on it if we don't receive a report from the State Department of Health. And as far as Melanie not finding out from the CDC within 72 hours, we have nothing to do with that. I don't know if they would have contacted Dr. Brady or Dr. Curtis, because I know when people were calling us for the results, we were having them call Dr. Curtis, because I would assume she was the one that might have the records. But we don't receive those at our office. They come from wherever they're diagnosed positive. If they're negative, we don't get them at all.
Do we have an infectious disease doctor in Pulaski County?
Dr. Allman said that he sends his people out.
I have seen two of them now.
In Pulaski County or
not
somewhere
Pulaski
else?
In Pulaski County, no.
Okay. And I know that I saw you had an advertisement in the journal identifying a doctor up in Valpo that was advertising. I noticed the audience is large here. Is this a subject matter you're here to listen to? Mm-hmm. Show of hands.
I'm not asking for money. I'm not. Because right now, I thank God, I'm not thanking God that I'm disabled, but I'm on disability, and I get Medicare, and thank God for the state that they do pay for the rest of it, Medicaid. But who's to say that I'm going to always have that to back it up? I don't even really have the gas money to go to Lafayette, to Maryville, South Bend. I don't have that kind of money. I'm on a fixed income. And my husband is laid up to try and get Social Security himself.
Melanie, do you have a copy? As Ms. Hansen stated, she's correct. They have a board meeting. The minutes are not approved until the following meeting of that said board. That's when the minutes come official. Even with Sheila and our meetings here, WKBI or the Journal or whoever else is representing us, these are unapproved minutes
but there are minutes until actually in another half hour or so we're going to approve the minutes of our last meeting. So with that in mind, I don't know if Terry, are you able to did you print it out your comments correct?
I have a copy of what I had read.
Correct.
To the
could you either make a copy?
You guys can have that one. I'll
give it to Terry so that they could be amended to your minutes.
Sure. We did not have.
I understand, but if that could be possible,
absolutely,
to be amended to the records. With your permission, I'm going to ask if anything else you'd like to say.
I was looking after the community and myself because I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here. Who else can stand up? I wanted to stand up, not just for myself, but for everyone else. And I think that Dr. Brady, he's no longer a doctor, I guess, anymore. Who knows? I don't know. But he's the one that suspected me to have it to begin with. He treated me with it. And then he gets fired. And I did not want to go to Dr. Curtis because I don't prefer her profession. I'm sorry. Some people do. I'm not one that does. Or Dr. Allman, either one. So I had to go out of the county, which I did. And they didn't even know what it was. So I'm still in the dark. I still really ain't got a doctor that can treat me. A primary doctor, anyway. I am seeing one temporarily. But I'm in loss of words. I don't know where I can turn, or if someone else in this room's got it, who they can turn to. I'm not just thinking of myself. I'm thinking of other people in this community.
You're looking at one. I, too, have Lyme's and mild cases of babesia. And I, too, am booking. The VA won't treat me.
Number three.
Okay.
I want to know why Dr. Brady was treated the way he was, first of all, and then I was with Van Sheer, okay, 1 year ago. This is a year later, folks. I managed 2 smoke shops in Knoxville, Indiana. I couldn't walk. It can be taken care of. Health department, stand up. Do you all realize every time one of us gives blood, everyone of you gets contaminated? It's the same thing as AIDS. Got it? You're all going to get it. So let's keep it quiet. Okay? Yeah. That's what they're trying to tell us. We can't do that. We need to really check it out.
Well, I don't know about the others, but we're not trying to keep anything quiet.
Okay, because it's awfully quiet in this room.
Yeah.
And I remember when Dr. Brady came to town, everybody knew, and we had a big thing in the newspaper.
Well, the reason we're kind of quiet is we don't know what you want us to do.
Yes, I guess I'm understanding what
I'm not the part of I don't know what. I'm not even here for this. I'm just curious, what do we need to do?
I guess we need to find another doctor like Dr. Brady, but, or find a way to bring him back.
Find a way to bring
him back. Do you know how many people came to see
him? But no one here. I understand that, but there was no one here. Who do we need to talk to?
I would say maybe the hospital board.
What's that?
Terry, what do you think?
But the problem is the health department. Isn't that about your health? Don't you want to know?
We do have guidelines we have to follow, though. I mean, we work at the local, so we follow what the state and the CDC do. We just work here to make sure.
Do we start here? Do we start at the state? Do we start at the CDC, which is where Dr. Curtis's letter, no phone call, letter I got in the mail with this. You're one of Dr. Brady's Lyme disease patients. For further information on where to be treated, contact the CDC in Atlanta.
See, I don't know about that, honestly.
Exactly. But these are things your community, you need to know.
Someone that I would think could honestly help you, because like you say, we just work there and we just have certain jobs to do. But I would say you might have good luck if you talk to the state epidemiologist.
Well, I'm here to tell you. I saw a rheumatologist and a doctor of internal medicine for IU Health. I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. They put me on Zeljan, $5,000 a month for over a year.
Oh my goodness.
I do not have RA. Mm-hmm. That destroys your immune system.
Do you know the number for that?
In my office, I sure do.
This is what not just this community, everywhere. It has to start somewhere.
No, oh, absolutely. Lyme disease is horrible.
And if more people,
I mean, you know, a lot of people,
lady, I'm sure she's going to at least have some guidance, because I'm clueless.
Right.
Yeah,
but we have to start
somewhere.
I've got
ticks in my woods. My dog's got ticks on them.
And if you actually took your honey, you know, your dog's tick didn't bite you and gave it to you.
I told it not to.
It's all mine.
Because you know what? Black leg is tick.
I
take that. Is what it is.
I got bit by a tick almost 20 years ago. I came down with something called cyanobacterium. And something else.
These are words I
wouldn't have the clue. But people are looking for my bacterial foods. It all boils down to Lyme disease from that Lyme.
Okay, let's. Yeah, we're right. Could we get your name first before we.
What's your name?
Yeah.
Did you start?
Karen Guy.
Karen Guy?
Guy, G Y.
Okay. And we know Jim. I don't think there's anyone else that spoke there, but. Ms. Hanson, you're correct. Where do we start?
We'll be happy to help.
I have time.
Don't get us wrong. We'll give you phone numbers. We'll give you information.
You made mention about the executive board of the hospital or the
Possibly. I think because some of the doctors on our board are also on that board.
Well,
just a thought.
Letters. Put things in writing. Your complaints. And address them to Board of Health, the hospital, the state, our representatives.
I have.
Okay, yes, you have, and I appreciate that. And I know that one of the comments, why do we write our representatives and senators? They're the ones that go together and change our IC laws, Indiana Code. Okay, they're the ones that gives the powers to be for XYZ to be practiced in Indiana, et cetera, et cetera. So, your petitions, your letter writings, write to the next board of commissioners, they need to be aware of this also, and I'm sure they will be. And ladies and gentlemen, yes, Gary is my twin, and yes, I hear it daily, okay? He and I are, we're doing our best. I can't go back and make things go away. I can't go and wave that magic wand and say, boom, Gary, you're practicing medicine in Pulaski County. The Indiana State Medical Association has put in writing, he's not treating Lyme and babesia. And one third of his medical records have to be reviewed to make sure he's not treating it. So, write the letters, make the phone calls, sign the petitions.
They tell me to get them over the county, and that's what I did. This is what I took.
Because no one has crossed this path before. These are new territories. We go to Virginia, they welcome Gary there in a heartbeat, because Virginia's on board. They recognize they have a problem. Indiana could be possibly, very, very speaking, 20 years behind Lyme. And we are the ones that are going to have to suffer until something happens. And it's going to take a group effort, groundswell of letter writing and phone calls to get someone to listen that can make the difference down at the State House. Come January 1st, my title's different. Now I'm going to be there right with you.
Because I have got a hold of the Indiana House of Republicans, House of Representatives,
yep.
Indiana State Senate,
yes.
Federal State Representative, and the State Department of Health.
And I have two.
Federal State yep. Representative. I mean, and they tell me, get a hold of your county board.
Correct. And
I'm just concerned about the community. I mean, I don't want no one to be feeling the way I'm feeling. I don't want someone to go give blood and give it to somebody else either. I'm like what I think her name is Karen said too.
Yes.
Because anybody that's got babesius or even Lyme disease and they give blood. I wrote Dennis Gumwine even and told him, is there any way that you can help me? You know why he sends me back on an email? He sends me back on an email. Would you please donate for 9/11? And I emailed him back. I said, no, I can't. I'm not going to take someone else's life. My life's in danger. It's not worth it. It's like, something's got to be done. I don't know where to begin. I've tried to start it. I don't know.
You're doing enough today, but you're not going to see the results today.
I understand that.
You, you're getting this on public record, okay? And that's the key. In my opinion, my past 3 or 4 years of being in this business, it's on record. And we appreciate that. And thank you. And I know Gary will thank you too. Anyone that has something in particular to say about this, be quick. I will listen to you. Please raise your hand and introduce yourself. Jared?
Yeah, Jared Goodman. Just all the people know my wife. But she's, we're young, obviously. And for 8 years, just kept getting sicker and sicker. We got 3 kids at home. And it was to the point where we're spending 5-6 days in the hospital. Every 6 months, she's septic, and they just look at us and tell us we're crazy. There's nothing wrong with her. Go see an infectious disease person, and the same thing we get. Well, have you been around birds? What are you talking about? Birds? No. And I mean, she stands the kitchen sink, dropping plates because her hands won't close. She couldn't pick up our kids, and this is coming from a 25-year-old mom. It's not right. It's not right. So we took a chance with Dr. Brady. Figured we'd get the same answer. I don't know what to tell you. There's nothing wrong with you. And this is, what, the best you've felt in 10 years? Picked up your kids. My replacing broken dishes bills went way down. And, I mean, it. You try to tell people about it and look at you like you're crazy. Yeah. Because nobody wants to hear about it. But it is. It's a problem. Especially, I mean, we're young, healthy people. We don't smoke, drink. We don't do anything. We're just, but nobody wants to help you because nobody wants to investigate it. It is a problem. It is a problem. I mean, I know that the county can't do a lot right here, but it is a problem. We show record. That's ours.
Thank you, Jared. Yes, ma'am. Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Sarah Weitrich. I just have. You said the last tick was in 2002.
No, the last one that had the bee.
Okay, that's what I meant. But like, do they test every tick for Lyme and the bee, or do they test them for Lyme?
I don't recall the time they were out there. It was the first 8 year season when they were pulling ticks off of deers. It was something the DNR was doing with the State Department of Health, and they were just. I think they were giving statistics on how which counties are bigger Lyme counties.
Because like Lyme and bee, they go together, but they don't like.
This isn't generally an area for it. It's more like Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Okay,
for the most part, but it doesn't mean they're not here. It
yeah.
just means that it's very rare okay. compared to that.
Like, I went to the CDC doctor. I was sick for a couple years. Like, I used to be independent. All of a sudden, it's like, sicker, sicker, sicker. You're crazy. There's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. 2 MRIs, CAT scan, ultrasound. You're fine. I went to the ER and they did a Lyme test at the ER. Then I was positive for Lyme. So much that they got me in touch with the infectious disease doctor. She made an appointment for me the next day. That day she's like, your symptoms are so severe, you have to get a PICC line in your arm right now, you're not going home, you're going to the hospital, this is a 14 days later, she says, you don't have Lyme because the test came back negative after it was already positive, which is also a problem. Not one time did they test me for a co-infection. Until I met Dr. Brady, and it went, tested me for a co-infection, and it was Babesia. And put me on Babesia medicine, voila. I'm functioning 32-year-old again. Have two kids. Was coaching volleyball. Couldn't even be in the gym without, like, that's how I ended up in the ER because I couldn't even function at a volleyball game. So, I don't know if it's just coming from tick, basically. So, not only do you need Dr. Brady back, but you also need people that are going to research where or what is causing it. If it is ticks, it's more than ticks. It's coming from somewhere. People just randomly don't get sick and then randomly get better. People that were seeing Dr. Brady were getting better. You don't just see a doctor.
Well, why do you have to call it anything? Like, if what you are being treated for is working for you, then why does it matter?
Right. Make it.
I don't. I see a hand. Go ahead.
I'll add my voice to that. I'm 69 years old.
Your name, please?
My name is Denise Charles. I live 1 mile south of the Plaska County line in White County. And just like these ladies, I've been to several doctors, $20,000 worth of testing. There's nothing wrong with you. It's all in your head. He started treating me, and last year at this time, I had to quit a job I really liked. I couldn't function anymore. I was on a couch 90% of the time. And I feel so much better, and my doctor's gone. And I don't know of anybody else, just like these other people, where to go, who has the same philosophy that he did. Maybe the markers aren't there, but the symptoms sure are, and this is what helps, and this is what you need. Now, nobody is out there to help us get that treatment. Or else you got to travel 120 miles round trip just to go see an infectious disease control doctor, because I can't take the antibiotic.
Well, Gary took additional training to be able to identify and treat Lyme's and other babesia. Every doctor in this community could take upon themselves to go and get additional education if they choose. So, when you write your letters to your doctors, your board of directors of these hospitals, ask them to challenge them to attempt to find a replacement doctor that can get this additional training. If we lived in Florida, where we all scuba dive, I guarantee you every doctor is going to be educated on how to identify and treat the bends.
I know, but I have already made 3 complaints to that hospital. You think they're going to listen to me? Honestly.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Yes, ma'am.
We need some numbers, names, numbers, organizations. We keep getting these thrown at us, all these different government agencies that we're not familiar with. Who are they? Where are they? Give us some information.
I imagine a letter will be out there within the next 10 days that have a list of phone numbers and addresses. And I'm sure you guys will know where you'll see that. I'll tell my brother to compile that. That would be my task. It's difficult, folks, to be in this seat. I hope you recognize that. I feel it. Coming here, okay, believe me. And Gary will know when I talk to him that I'm carrying it for him right now. He wants to work. He came back, he went off, served our country for 29 years, and he wanted to come back because he started here as an EMT at PMH, and he wanted to give back to our community. Gary's training is different than most providers. He jumped out of helicopters and took care of the wounded warriors in Afghanistan. Not every doctor here can say that. His mindset is totally different. He knows when he picks up the phone, he has someone on the other line that's trusting what he is saying that he needs done. That's that connectiveness of our military family, that trust. He came back to Winnemac. He had a home practice. Dr. Curtis gave him that opportunity, yes. But not the trust. It left somewhere pretty quick. Gary went, he was one of nine doctors in the state of Indiana who got this additional training.
I've seen that on the internet. As a matter of fact, it's still on the internet.
Yeah. Gary still has the knowledge, and he still has the will. So, somehow the community needs to burn down the phone lines, calling up the people in the places that say, we need him back.
Yeah, but, I mean, does everybody that's here is going to do what you're suggesting to do? But what about everybody else that hasn't made it in order?
I know he had a whole list of people that he was not able to see.
And it wasn't just the babesius that Dr. Brady helped me with. I've had a bad back. He helped me with my back.
He's a D.O. He's a D.O. too. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for coming here tonight. I know it didn't solve any answers, but we know there's an energy out there that needs some attention. We know that we, the board, knows. And I pray every night, if I'm allowed to say that, I pray every night for the health and well-being of our community is strong. And if not, they should seek out the strength somewhere. Yes, ma'am. Name first, please.
Hi. Rita Harrington.
Yes, Rita.
Yes, I was diagnosed and with Dr. Brady also. And he helped me immensely by the diagnosis. And since he's not practicing, I've had to go, you know, drive hours at a time to try to find another doctor. But I would like to say, I think that Lyme disease, it's a bacteria. It's no, you know, worse than a lot of others. And it seems smarter and harder to deal with. But it's only a bacteria. And we can't find ways to cure it. So I just have such a hard time understanding why this is happening and why doctors are acting like it doesn't exist. Why you can't find any treatment. It almost feels like a cover-up of some sort. Like nobody wants to admit that, you know, it's a bacteria just like others. You treat it with antibiotics and, you know, might be a little harder to cure, but I think, you know, the problem is not recognizing it. And we should all be concerned to safeguard our blood supply. We don't want to be infecting people with terrible, I've suffered, and I probably had it long term, but I didn't realize, you know, being out in the country and I got a tick and just picked it off and went my merry way. But when I tried to find out, it was very hard to get diagnosed. And all I got was narcotic painkillers, Xanax, horrible mess of things that, you know, didn't help at all. In fact, maybe gave me worse problems. Yeah. And I would go and pay hundreds of dollars and talk to someone for 7 or 8 minutes because they were in too big of a hurry to understand the complex diagnosis. And when I went to Dr. Brady, that's when I started getting better. And he, I must say, was the best doctor I've ever had in my life. And for him to be treated like this in his own hometown, I find it pretty sad that we were so lucky to have a doctor like that. And I just hope that he can start practicing again if he's not practicing. And it is hard to find why the CDC says the things they are. And in seeking treatment in other places from doctors that were Lyme specialists, and I'm told that nobody goes by the CDC anymore. And there are a few labs that, you know, this is not a mystery. And if I don't understand why, you know, what the deal is. But I hope we do get to the bottom of it because it's a bacteria. just like if you got any other germ. But it's been very debilitating for me. It's been very expensive, and I've had to do a lot on my own. And I'm still not over it. And they say I have babesia, so however you pronounce it, babesia, which is a germ that gets inside your red blood cells and can, you know, damage, it tears down your immune system. But it's not a mystery.
Correct.
And I've heard from people that have been treating it and understand it, that there's a lot of other states, like Kentucky, that even seems like here, at least we have had a few good doctors, like Dr. Brady, and also up in Valpo, I think we might find Dr. Smith to be a Lyme specialist. And it is a super far drive, but it is hard when you don't have resources.
Or don't feel like you can make that drive.
Right, and I've been lucky to be able to find some other sources and keep working at it. But, you know, it is a severe problem. And in Kentucky, a lot of people live in, you know, mountainous and where they don't know about it, and information hasn't been put out about it. You're seeing children with it, pets with it, and they don't even seek treatment, and they don't even know. The longer you have it, the more severe it gets.
Correct.
So, you know, if anybody thinks it's a joke or something, it's not. It's serious, and I mean, you suffer with it.
Thank
and
you.
It's something that you can cure sometimes with antibiotics, or there are other alternative treatments.
Thank you, Rita. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We're going to move on. Thank you, Melanie. Please give your thanks to Terry. Thank you. We're going to continue on with our portion of the meeting here.
You guys have a blessed day.
Thank you for coming. Take care.
I'm done.
I think we're conference. Oh, Sheriff, sorry.
Jeff, this one? Sheriff?
Do you need help down? We have an elevator. Okay.
I'm up here about your 911 fund again. We found out that we can't transfer money from department to department, so we just need to request you guys to spend it on that 911 bill that we've been talking about. So that's what I'm here to ask you to do. And I don't know if Sheila wants to write that, or if that's something Carrie does, or
if he has an invoice and you agree to paying the 911 whatever the bill is, then their account number, the account number that is in your
department, yeah,
then it can be paid. The sheriff wouldn't sign it, Terry would.
I move to approve that request to have it come out of the commissioner's fund.
Did you catch that?
Basically, we're going to pay for his 911 bill out of our account, commissioner's account.
Yeah, they have to come out.
Well,
it'll pay part of it. It's not going to cover it.
Is that a second?
Yes. Okay. I have a motion second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All good.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
That was easy.
Sheila?
Jason Woodruff to go to a conference at Indiana Wesleyan University in Greenwood, Indiana for training. And Nathan Oringer to send Kristen to Ball State Community Institution.
Move to approve the conference request as presented. And you got the ones with the highway department wanting to go to IACC?
Yeah, that's another. They didn't give me no paper.
Yeah, that's fine.
Have a motion second to approve the conference request. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
we have a extension contract.
Purdue Extension?
Yes. Between Plaski County and Purdue University.
Move the Kevin, I imagine this is a typical extension request. Move to approve the extension request.
Seconded. I have a motion and a second to approve and sign the contractual agreement between Purdue and Plaski County. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
And then the other one would be just to give you, put it in your packet, the notice of a public hearing regarding the Indian Creek reconstruction project.
Got that. Thank you.
And that's it. Other than claims and payroll.
Any concerns with the minutes as presented?
No.
No questions.
Move to approve the minutes as presented.
Second.
Any questions of the claims? Move to approve the claims as presented and payroll. Any questions of payroll?
Second.
Move to approve the payroll as presented.
Have a motion second to approve minutes, payroll, and claims as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried.
Public comment.
Any public comment? Go.
Move to adjourn the meeting as present. Or geez. Move to adjourn the meeting.
Okay. Have a motion and second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Stand adjourned.
So, Gary's still practicing.
Yeah. You know, we could if they allow him to. They won't allow him to. A third of his records would have to be reviewed by a non-Lyme liver doctor to make sure he's not treating Lyme and babesia.